Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 22 of the 2QB Experience. This is the John Kuhn Experience. Just kidding. It's the Ben Roethlisberger Experience. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Greg Smith, at Greg Suss on Twitter. On the line, your other host, Joshua Lake, at Lake 2QBs. Mr. Lake, how was your week four?
Hey, John Kuhn, Kyle Juszczyk. It was a week four to love.
Man, I really, really loved Mark Ingram this year, and this John Kuhn thing, like, when it was just one TD last week, I was like, okay, I can handle that. And then three in week four, just complete absurdity. Was it two or three? I think it was three.
Yeah, I think he got a third one there at the end.
Oh, God, just kill me now. That was terrible.
Yeah, it's disappointing because Ingram still looks good. I mean, almost every year he looks good when he's healthy, and they just... the Saints don't use him the way you would want.
Yeah, I mean, John Kuhn really has made a career of this, just vulturing TDs from desperate fantasy owners. I mean, how long did he do that in Green Bay for? It's God, he's the worst. All right, before we jump into the show here, I want to do something that we usually say for the end of the show because it is pretty important to us. I want to encourage listeners to please rate and review the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. I won't do this every week, but I implore you to do it now just because we could really use the support. You know, good things are going on at 2QBs.com, and we want other people to know about those things as well. So if you wouldn't mind, do us a solid, get out there and write and review it. That's the end of my little spiel there. Josh, you got anything else you want to talk about before we kick things off here?
Hey, let's just dive in. There was a lot of really interesting games. I kind of like to get to those.
Yeah, so week four. Kind of a train wreck. It was a strange slate of games, and you know we had a couple injuries. Let's start off with that. We saw Cam Newton and Carson Palmer go down, replaced by Derek Anderson and Drew Stanton, respectively. How are you feeling about those two, you know, assumed starters and their backups, Josh?
Right. It being the concussion protocol, who knows what things are going to look like, but the Carson Palmer one is really bad because the Cardinals play on Thursday. And so Drew Stanton, you've got to think, is a heavy favorite to be starting against the San Francisco 49ers. And as far as long-term for the starters, I'm not worried about either. I mean, while concussions can be very problematic, there's not a reason to think these are long-term injuries, at least at this point. So I'm not worried long-term, but I do think Drew Stanton is going to get the start and is not a good option, but he's someone that you certainly will have to consider against a 49ers defense that isn't very scary. It's just the short week worries me.
Yeah, I would like him more if I knew he was starting and he was playing on Sunday or Monday, if only because of what you just talked about, that, you know, extra practice time. Like, he's going to have to get thrust into this starting role with, you know, 2 days to practice. And even against, you know, a lower tier team like the Niners, that doesn't really bode well for Drew Stanton. Although, you know, if you're desperate, I could see rolling him out in a 2QB league. I've rolled out worse in the past. Let's talk a little bit more about Derek Anderson, because we've seen him fill in for Cam and we've seen the Jekyll and Hyde. We've seen the good games and then the complete catastrophe games. Do you have any interest in adding Derek Anderson off waivers?
I think I have to, just because Tampa Bay has been so favorable to opposing quarterbacks, but I don't like Anderson. I don't think he's a good option, but I think he is. I think just as far as like talent and system and matchup, he's probably going to be above the Case Keenums of the world, but not many other quarterbacks. So it'll depend on how deep your league is.
Does what's going on in Carolina change how you feel at all about their running backs? If Cam Newton isn't playing, I could envision a scenario where Cameron Artis Payne and Fozzie Whitaker and Mike Tolbert actually get used around the goal line and maybe just in general see a higher volume of carries. Do you have any interest in those three?
I mean, that's a solid point. I think the problem that we always have is just not knowing the usage. They're not intriguing backs because they're going to split the load so heavily, and so you're really just kind of hoping you get the one with the touchdowns. And so I don't know that I'm excited about any of them, but yours is a good point that if Cam Newton's not there, it probably means more goal line percentage. But I also wonder, will they be at the goal line as often as they would? So it may even out to just kind of they remain mediocre options.
That's right. And considering that Derek Anderson might be the quarterback, other teams might just not respect him to throw the ball at all because we've seen him, you know, throw five or six interceptions in single games in the past. If they stack the line against those running backs, I don't know if there'll be all that much room to run for them. But with that said, I do like Fozzie Whitaker a little bit more. I do like Cameron Artis Payne a little bit more. I'm definitely more of a Whitaker guy because he's the one who's active in the passing game. And we'll get to that matchup between the Panthers and the Buccaneers a little bit later. But I could envision a scenario where, maybe there is a little bit more offense on both sides of the ball than maybe we would expect. Let's move on to another injury, and this is a bit of a sad note compared to, where we were last week on him. The demise of, or the supposed demise at least, of Trevor Siemian, and the beginning of the Paxton Lynch era. We saw today that Gary Kubiak says Trevor Siemian is our starter, and while there's, you can't not put some stock into that, you also can't fully buy into that either. We know that they drafted Paxton Lynch with the thought to, have him be their long-term starter. I don't know if they wanted him to get his feet wet this soon, but, maybe he'll be forced into action just because Siemian can't play. Either way, what's your outlook on this Denver Broncos passing offense going forward?
It's interesting because Kubiak is saying all the things you would expect if Siemian were the guy. He's saying Siemian looks day to day, Siemian's our starter. All of these things that seem at odds with the fact that Trevor Siemian was a seventh round pick and Paxton Lynch was clearly not. But maybe Lynch just isn't ready. Maybe that's what's going on behind the scenes, but that's not what I've seen from beat reporters. So I've got to think that, like we talked about last week, this is Lynch's job at some point in this year, and I don't see a reason why they would go away from him this week. Let Siemian heal, give Lynch an opportunity. If he looks bad, you say, okay, we said Siemian was our starter, we'll go back to him, but you at least have that opportunity there. I think the passing game is interesting, but if it's Lynch, I would expect they tone it back down, kind of a la weeks one and two, and say we won't really rely on Lynch, we'll let him learn the game. Whereas if it's Siemian, I'm very interested. I think this could be a very big week for Trevor Siemian playing. I believe they're at home against Atlanta, and so I would really like Siemian if he is going to get the start.
Yeah, I definitely agree with your point about Kubiak kind of just covering his own ass, looking at this situation and saying, well, if I say that Siemian is still the starter and Paxton Lynch does disappoint, then I can very easily go back to Siemian. Of course, if Paxton Lynch comes out and plays very well this weekend in a good matchup, and then, in well in the matchups after that, he can, feel good about saying, okay, well, Trevor Siemian was our starting quarterback, right? It will be interesting to see what this does to their receivers. We saw that, Siemian in week three kind of turned it on for Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. And they both look good in week four as well. I think they both caught touchdown passes. Sanders is still getting more targets than Demaryius Thomas, but I don't really care too much about that because DT is such a good red zone threat. I think they'll both have value if, the Broncos can keep up that volume that we've seen. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting situation to monitor. I think you have to try to pick up Paxton Lynch if he's available in your 2QB league. He probably should have already been owned, to be honest. But where would you stand on, say, Lynch versus one of the other, more stream-worthy quarterbacks? Guys like Case Keenum, Brian Hoyer, maybe Cody Kessler. Would you rather have Lynch than any of those guys?
I think he's right there in the mix. Brian Hoyer to me is a step above, and we probably will talk about him a little more. But I trust Hoyer. He's got experience. He's on an offense that's decent. But I would say that Lynch is probably going to fall in that Cody Kessler range of we don't like him. We don't think that he's a great option. But the thing is, Lynch has got a better team around him than the Case Keenums and Cody Kesslers of the world. So I think he would be right in that mix and someone I'd be looking at depending on the matchup. What about you?
Yeah, same. Better game scripts for Lynch, which could cut both ways, right? It could put him in situations where the defense isn't respecting him to pass all that much, and so he succeeds doing so. Or it could just mean that, he doesn't have the volume to be quite as fantasy relevant as we want to. It could be a situation exactly like we saw with Siemian, right? Where some weeks he barely does anything, and other weeks they happen to throw in the red zone and it works out well. Yeah, I think that's the range for him. But you mentioned Brian Hoyer. Let's talk about him next. He looked good in week four. The Bears beat the Lions in a bit of an upset. Is it time to cut Jay Cutler if you're in a 2QB league?
I don't think you can cut him at this point, but I think that there's a very real possibility this is Brian Hoyer's job. Hoyer, in his two starts, this season is averaging 23 fantasy points per game. And granted, these are fairly easy matchups, but he also has Colts, Jaguars coming up the next 2 weeks. And then it gets the Packers. The Vikings are going to be tough after that. But I think that Hoyer is going to be very usable for these next 2 weeks. Really, what you're looking at with Jay Cutler is probably Chicago's week 9 bye, how the team is looking at that point and whether they turn to Cutler after that. And that's pure speculation. I mean, who knows with an injury and what that'll look like. But I think it's very possible that Hoyer does keep the job. I guess my answer as far as not cutting him is this is still a valuable role no matter which one it is, in the sense that they're so far and above the Cody Kesslers and Case Keenums of the world that they're closer to that QB2 tier. And so if it is Cutler, you would hate to lose him, but it'll depend on the depth of your waiver wire.
Yeah, and kind of contrary to what we're seeing with the Broncos, the Bears coaching staff is coming out and saying essentially that Hoyer has played well, and if he continues to do so, it'll be hard for them to go back to Jay Cutler. They're already kind of preheating that oven, and I don't know. I tend to believe that Brian Hoyer, if healthy, is going to be the starter for most of the rest of the year, especially when you consider, like you said, these next two matchups, which are very solid, and even the matchup with Green Bay should be fine. I don't see any reason for them to move off of Hoyer unless he really craps the bed. And I wouldn't blame you for cutting Jay Cutler. We know that fantasy is a weekly game. You kind of have to play in the moment most of the time. And, you know, maybe you want to pick up Paxton Lynch, or maybe you want to pick up, a wide receiver or running back that you need to fill for a bye week. Like, that sort of stuff happens all the time, and you have to cut somebody. Jay Cutler is a very cuttable asset in my mind, and I'm with you. Like, I'd like to be able to hold on to him on the chance that he gets that role back. And, you know, there will be other teams where you have to hold on and pray because maybe you don't have a third or fourth quarterback option aside from Jay Cutler. I like I said, I wouldn't blame anybody for pulling the trigger. I might do it this week. I own Cutler in a league where I might need to make some moves this week. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, the John Fox quote is a good point. Just his quote was, anybody that's performing well, I don't think we're going to be likely to change, which is far from saying Jay Cutler's our guy, which is interesting that Trevor Siemian, like you said, is getting more love than Jay Cutler at this point. So, no, yours are valid points. I definitely hear you on that.
Yeah. I want to try out a little new mini segment here on the podcast, and I want to call it the 2QB bust of the week and boom of the week, and kind of get your take on these two quarterbacks. The bust has got to be Matthew Stafford, right? This is a guy who was probably ranked top five for most people going into that matchup with Hoyer in Chicago, and he did not fare well, did not throw any touchdown passes, didn't have very much yardage. What happened to Stafford in week 4?
Yeah, right now we're recording at the start of the Monday night game, and before those two quarterbacks play, he's QB 29 out of 30 starters. That is just incredible. I don't know. I didn't get to watch this game, but I do think it's going to be an exception rather than a rule. I do think that he's going to keep having the volume. I mean, he threw 36 times this week, and the biggest difference is he just didn't get in the end zone. He only had 213 yards. The problem is it's against the Bears, who are missing players who aren't a great secondary in general. So I think it's more an off week than anything else. I do still trust him, but man, that really hurts at the point where we probably, I would imagine both you and I would have said, yeah, he's pretty well locked in. We know what he is. We're going to like him going forward. And then he's just dreadful in week 4. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is just another reminder that Matthew Stafford is, you know, not an elite quarterback. I mean, he's in a good situation. He's in a pretty good offense. But a lot of his value is driven strictly by volume and by the fact that his defense is not very good. And I don't know. I'm not a huge Stafford guy. I haven't been in a long time. I wouldn't necessarily try to trade him or anything, but you have to understand that these bad weeks could be coming from time to time because he has been inconsistent in the past. We've seen that before. The 2QB boom of the week, Case Keenum out of nowhere. How did that happen?
Yeah, that still makes no sense to me. He's QB 11. He had 22 points. What gives? I mean, I was literally just saying Case Keenum is kind of the dregs of the league, and he put together a very impressive for Case Keenum week. I mean, he was 18 of 30 for 266 yards, but two passing touchdowns for the second week in a row. And this was at Arizona. I mean,
a tough matchup.
Yeah, no one would have said this is the week to play him. And so I'm impressed. I'm not putting a lot of stock in it, but I am impressed.
Yeah, I had the Cardinals ranked as my number one defense for the week, and that did not work out well for me. Does this change your opinion of that defense going forward? Not necessarily in terms of fantasy production, but more in terms of which quarterbacks you'll be willing to play against Arizona moving forward?
No, this is another one where I think it's an exception rather than a rule. According to 4-for-4's adjusted fantasy points allowed, Arizona before week four was the toughest matchup for fantasy quarterbacks. And I really, while it's pretty impressive that Case Keenum did what he did, I still am going to say that you don't want to play quarterbacks against Arizona if you can help it. I mean, if it's a tiebreaker, again, I would prioritize the quarterback himself over the matchup. But if you need a tiebreaker, I think Arizona is still going to be a very legitimate defense.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. It could just be a situation where the Cardinals came into this game just sleeping on their opponent. You know, they're like, ah, the Rams suck. We're not going to have to show up for this game. And then they didn't show up, and the Rams did. You know, that stuff happens in the NFL. You call it a trap game, call it what you will. But I thought that was really interesting to see him get into that top 12 among fantasy scorers. We'll see if he stays there after the Monday night game. But, props to Case Keenum. Well done. I bet Sal is happy.
Absolutely. And I will just, as an honorable mention, Brian Hoyer is up there at QB7 this week. So the guy we just mentioned is another huge boom that I don't know that anyone would have predicted he was top 10.
So just in general, have the results from the first 4 weeks of the season given you any more, you know, kind of insight into your drafting process, maybe from the preseason or looking forward to next year? Would you be more likely to take a studs and streaming or a late run quarterback approach based upon what we've seen this year? Or do you think it's just too, you know, kind of fluky year to year how these injuries and, you know, benchings can work out?
I mean, at quarterback, I feel like we are generally seeing the same pattern that you showed us in your data over the offseason, that kind of the top 20 to 25 guys are who we thought they were, and the bottom ones, the RG3s, even the Jay Cutler kind of on the fringe there, although it's an injury at this point, the Rams, the Broncos, those are the ones we're unsure about. But I feel like for the rest of them, while there's been some fluke performances, like the Marcus Mariota of the world down at QB 30 in points per game is unexpected. He clearly is well off of that, the expectation. But in general, I think we're kind of close to what we would expect. And I don't know that it's changing a lot for me. It's fun to see, like Matt Ryan at QB 1 is another outlier on the opposite side of things. But we also have plenty of, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is good, Drew Brees is good, Cam Newton is good. Like, there's a lot that we expected that is holding true. So I don't know that I'm going to change a whole lot off of what I've seen these first 4 weeks.
So let's get to our spotlight QB of the week, and that's Ben Roethlisberger. And I don't know about you, but I'd say he's probably delivered for me on the baseline fantasy expectations for him from draft season. You know, he's had two solid weeks, one, you know, bad week, and just this week against Kansas City, he was incredible. You watched most of this game, or most of the relevant parts of this game, I imagine. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a good clarification. By the third, fourth quarter, it was not a very interesting game. But yeah, I saw the first half and then kind of started zoning out by the second half.
Yeah, man, just quick side note on that. Just, it was pretty sad as I was watching the game, you know, later into the game, how much, you know, Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth just had nothing more to say about it. They started talking about golf, they started talking about baseball and hockey, and but just spinning all these yarns about everything but what was going on in the field, because the game was such a train wreck. It's always kind of hilarious to me when that stuff happens.
Yeah, I think it was during Collinsworth's Arnold Palmer anecdote that he was like, I don't know if I should say this. And the response was, I mean, look at the game. We might as well. Like, it's kind of refreshing to hear their candor. Like, this is not a good game.
Yeah, man. And it was one of those things where there's maybe a slight hope for a while that Alex Smith would pull the type of comeback he did in week one. But it just looked like the Steelers were doing everything right and the Chiefs were doing everything wrong. Was there one thing that you noticed in this game about Roethlisberger or the Steelers offense that maybe caught you off guard or intrigued you a little bit more than everything else?
I was pretty interested in something that they highlighted in the broadcast, but then as far as what happened in the first 3 weeks, but then it happened again, that Ben was really looking pretty far downfield, something that coming into the season I was unsure would exist in the offense because Martavis Bryant was going to be missing. But it really does look like primarily Sammy Coates, but Antonio Brown to a degree as well, are going deep, and Ben is still looking deep, and having that explosive element really can boost your fantasy potential. I mean, we saw it some this week, and we've seen it in past weeks as well for other quarterbacks. If you can get that 160-yard touchdown, you right away are in a good fantasy position if you have just a mediocre rest of the game. And so I was really interested to see that the Steelers are emphasizing the deep game even without Bryant.
Yeah, and it makes sense, too. They have a good running game, especially off of play action, things like that. You can give your receivers a little bit more time to get downfield, maybe get safeties to bite on that play action. We definitely saw that last night. I don't have the ADOT numbers in front of me, but I'm looking at his yards per attempt from fantasy data, and it was by far his best of the game, 11.1 yards per attempt, where the best before that was against Washington with 8.1. So 3 extra yards per passing attempt in week 4 relative to his best game before that. That's pretty impressive. One thing that I noticed was that running back usage. Le'Veon Bell, I was surprised to see him moving out to line up as a receiver so much. He would often start pre-snap in the backfield and then motion out to the sides, often to the slot, and often with D'Angelo Williams still in the backfield. And it's nice to see Bell and Williams both being used still. And I think that not only bodes well for both of those running backs, especially Williams, who we thought might not have any value moving forward. And he scored a quick touchdown there at the end of the game in garbage time. But I think it bodes well for Roethlisberger and the offense as a whole. Like, if they're going to keep their best players on the field, I think that really sets them up for success. And I hope that we get to see that because it's fun to watch.
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. I like seeing that they found a way to keep D'Angelo Williams on the field. And another thing that the broadcasters, I mean, I really like that broadcast team, so I'm talking about their analysis a lot as opposed to when Phil Simms is on the broadcast and I listen on mute. But it was really a good point of theirs that these have two different running styles, that D'Angelo Williams is just so straight ahead. And in contrast, Le'Veon Bell has the patience and kind of a different style and different timing. I think that's going to work really well for them if they can be rotating both of them and just having two different looks coming at defenses.
Well, and the fact that both of them are such good receivers, too, just really helps them spread that offense out and, make those big plays happen. It's pretty cool. Like, there were some screen plays, too, that, short, depth of target, but, based upon the fact that Sammy Coates and Antonio Brown are running deep, there's just no one there in the middle of the field to help out on those plays. It's a really explosive and dangerous offense in a lot of different ways. I'm higher on Roethlisberger now. And I mean, as suspected, right, that Le'Veon Bell is back. I think that's a big deal. Let's move on to the quarterback finish game. We're through 4 games with the Steelers. How many of the remaining 12 do you believe Roethlisberger will be a top 20 quarterback, Josh?
So 12 left. Of those 12... I'm going to say 8.
Okay, I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic. I'm going to say 10. I really like what I saw last week. I understand that they were at home, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, but I think that there's real fantasy potential with Roethlisberger and this offense. I think that this might be one of those situations where a lot of people were wrong in the preseason when they faded him, but maybe I'm wrong. We'll see. How about top 10 finishes? I'll go first on this one. I'm going to predict another 5 from him through the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that's... See, I'm going to go even bolder there. I think 6 of my 8 are going to be top 10.
I think that
when he does well, he's going to do really well. We kind of talked about this in the offseason, too. Ben has more bust weeks than you would want. He's only had one of them this year so far, but still 25% is a pretty high percentage, and that's what he was last year as well. So I'm going to say when he does well, he does pretty well.
Okay, so your high ceiling, lower floor argument definitely lines up with the home road splits we've seen with Big Ben. And I kind of want to highlight these a little bit just because, he is the spotlight QB. Is Big Ben the new Drew Brees, though? I mean, if you look at his game splits, I got these from the RotoViz game splits app. And if you look at it over the past 4 years since 2012, which is like the same data that's covered in our QB cards on the site, there's definitely a discrepancy. He plays better at home, almost 25 points per game at home, only about 20 on the road. But if you just look at the past 3 years from 2014 until today, he's played 15 games at home where he's averaging almost 30 points per game, and 16 games on the road where he's at about 18 points per game. That's a huge discrepancy, isn't it?
Yeah, that was honestly, this is not something I had realized until you pointed it out in our prep this week. That's a huge difference. I mean, especially, like you said, the most recent splits, that's a really astounding, I mean, that really is Drew Brees' the best comp there, that it suggests that he's just elite of the elite at home, and away, he's kind of a middling option.
Yeah, he throws for about one touchdown pass per game when he's on the road, and that number jumps up to 2.73 at home, and the yardage goes up by about 60 yards better at home, which is just, it's astounding. It's incredible. I don't really know what to make of it because I really don't see how home field should matter that much to players, but apparently it does.
Yeah, and just this season and the last two, that's I believe a 31 game sample that you pulled of when Ben has been playing, and that's not insignificant. That's two full seasons essentially. So we're not just picking out this season and kind of going with a four game sample. There's some meaningful data there.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's not like he plays in a dome like Brees does, where, you know, the conditions are always perfect. You know, he plays outdoors, he plays on the road in a lot of similar stadiums. I maybe it's just a testament to how tough that division plays itself, but I do think that is a little worrisome. If you're looking at Ben as a long-term option this season, you may want to temper your expectations when he's on the on the road. But I am still a little bullish on him rest of the season. I think he's due for more big things. Next thing I want to talk about is this mini emergence of Sammy Coates that you pointed out earlier. He's a guy who is starting to get used more, mostly based on injuries. You know, at first it was Marcus Wheaton who was missing time. Now it's Eli Rogers. And Coates is starting to deliver on some of the hype that he was getting, you know, way back early in the preseason. Are you buying into Coates?
I think I am just a little bit. His target numbers this season have been 3, 5, 4, and 8. So this week was definitely almost a 100% increase over his best week in the past. So I'm not saying that he's an 8-target-a-week guy. But yeah, I think he has a clear role in this offense, and he is starting to look like the second most trusted receiver for Ben, which can be a valuable role. The wide receiver 3 isn't real valuable in Pittsburgh, but I think the wide receiver 2 can be.
Yeah, and just kind of to that point, I don't even know if it's necessarily a wide receiver 2, wide receiver 3 thing. I just like that they do spread the ball around. We saw a lot of different receivers get involved. We saw Wheaton. We saw Hayward Bay. We saw Jesse James catch a touchdown. The Steelers are, and Roethlisberger are willing to, you know, look to different targets. And, you know, that's in spite of, you know, some drops that these guys have and just in general kind of spotty play. I like when teams are willing to trust their guys because you have to in the NFL. You can't always just lean on one receiver because defenses can account for that. And I think that the most explosive offenses are the ones that have a lot of different options that they're willing to throw to. And this team fits the bill.
Yeah, I mean, you want pieces of good offenses that are going to score a lot of points. And Coates is looking like a more relevant piece than he had last year, for sure. And even than he had the first couple of weeks.
Yeah, so let's look a little bit ahead for Roethlisberger. And the first thing I want to look at is the eventual supposed return of Ladarius Green. Let's say he does come back on time. Maybe around week 8 or week 9 or 10, something like that. Do you think that that does anything to boost Roethlisberger's value? Do you want Ladarius Green in fantasy? Where are you at on that dynamic?
I'm not a Green guy. I just don't care. I think Jesse James is fine, and I'm not putting any sort of optimism into Ladarius Green. So for me, no, it doesn't change the offense. If he does play and he's good, that's a fun bonus, but I'm not projecting out Ben for any sort of improvement based on it. I mean, this is kind of who Ladarius Green has been. There's a lot of hype, but there hasn't been a lot of production. And until we actually see some production, I'm not going to project it.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially because there are so many receiving threats on that team. It's just going to be a lot of mouths to feed. And while Green may have a good game or two, I think it's going to be really hard to predict that. Like, the more we talk on the pod here about this offense, the more it does remind me of New Orleans. Do you get that same impression? It's really hard to predict, you know, which receivers are going to be involved. And I mean, aside from the key guy, Antonio Brown, who just continues to be the GOAT, but the parallels are kind of interesting, aren't they?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. The volume, the home road splits, the unpredictability. I think there's obvious differences that you like the run game here better, that you do have the GOAT receiver, someone that you can trust. But there are some interesting similarities. And as Breeze is kind of hitting the tail end of his career, maybe Roethlisberger is picking that up.
Yeah, maybe. Let's look a little bit more short term here. Let's look to week five. The Steelers stay at home and they're going to play the Jets. What do you expect from Roethlisberger in this game?
I think this will be another good game for him. The Jets have been just vicious against the run, but giving up a ton of points through the air. And I think that Roethlisberger should be a very strong option this week. The only concern I would have is if the Jets can score enough to keep Ben throwing.
Yeah, that's a good point. We talked about Coates earlier. Where would Coates kind of slot for you in terms of the type of wide receiver commodity he is in week five? Do you think he's like a wide receiver three or a flex play?
Yeah, he's probably in that flex range for me. He's interesting, but like I said, I think he's probably going to balance out at five or six targets, and I don't know that that's enough that I want to really slot him in as a guaranteed starter just because of the unpredictability you pointed out. You do a lot more ranking of all the positions, whereas I tend to focus more on the quarterback, so I'm interested to hear from you. Where are you at on Coates for this week?
I had him... what I felt was relatively high coming into this week. I'm a bit of a Coates believer. I'm a Coates truther to some extent. I will have him in that kind of low wide receiver three, wide receiver four range, to where you might play him in a flex, especially if you have enough guys on bye. I'm with you though. It's not a guarantee that he sees any sort of volume. So you have to be careful. It's kind of a boom bust play if you're going to use him, but you know, the opportunity is there and the potential for a big game is definitely there. Like you said, if they have to throw a lot because the run is ineffective, that could mean big things for Coates. And I'd like to see that because I own him in a couple spots.
How much, just this is out of curiosity, how much do you think that Ben Roethlisberger is a matchup play? Because his three good games are against mediocre to bad pass defenses. And Philadelphia, the one really good defense that he's faced, is his zero touchdown game. Do you think that's something we should be looking at more with him?
That's a good question. I haven't thought too much about that, but I don't think so. I think that was more indicative of him going on the road to, you know, like an interstate rival at Philadelphia against what is a very good defense. Now, should that make us think about benching him against other really good defenses? Sure. The problem is he doesn't really play any really good defenses for the rest of the year. Probably his worst matchup looking forward is at Baltimore in week 9. But that's the Steelers coming off their bye. So I think if you have Roethlisberger, especially in a 2QB or a Superflex league, you're probably just starting him every week. I think I would.
Yeah, and your point is good that the schedule, as I'm looking at it, is favorable. I'm probably too low with 8 of his next 12 being top 20 finishes. I think you're right that the Ravens that he plays twice are really the only one that looks intimidating. And I don't know that the Ravens, I don't know, I'm torn on how good they are.
Me too. Actually, that's something I kind of wanted to talk to you about in the open and forgot to, but I watched a fair amount of that game because being from the Bay Area, I get a lot of Raiders and 49ers games. And
sorry.
No, it's okay. It was interesting watching that Oakland-Baltimore game because we kind of finally saw Baltimore have to play a real offense. And, you know, all the hype that was kind of coming up about the Baltimore defense sort of melted away as I was watching that game. I was like, you know, maybe Baltimore's defense isn't that good. And so that's going to be something to monitor going forward. I don't know how much I buy into that. I think Baltimore is a generally good team, but and that Oakland is a good offense. So I think it was just might have been one of those, you know, 50-50 type of matchups where one team was going to look better than they actually are, and one team was going to look worse than they actually are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's. I think that's probably right. I mean, Derek Carr ended with 199 passing yards. So even though he had the four touchdowns, they really didn't let them move the ball too efficiently through the air. And so that's why I'm kind of. I don't know how to feel about them because they have been a kind of a top half defense, or like as far as they've been pretty good this off season or this season, I should say. Sorry, I'm stumbling all over my words. But I'm not convinced that they're the Ravens of old. This isn't the Ray Lewis and Ed Reed Ravens, but I do think they're a better matchup by far than they were last year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I
That's a bad
totally
way of
agree.
phrasing it, but yeah, you know what I mean.
I do, and I agree with you. I think that actually, if you're talking about matchups, because of the way Baltimore plays defense, I think that Oakland was a particularly bad matchup for them. You know, they are good at defending the deep pass, but Oakland isn't necessarily built to throw deep. Like, they have two very good possession wide receivers. They have a pretty good receiving tight end. Their running game and offensive line are both pretty solid, to the point where they don't really need to take big shots to beat you on offense. They can just kind of nickel and dime you with short throws, and possession type throws, to like those ones you saw Crabtree catching for touchdowns. I think that was just a bad scenario for the Ravens, and you know, maybe that'll be a way you can exploit that matchup looking forward, like other teams that may be built in that same mold. Not that there are a whole lot of teams who have two receivers like Crabtree and Cooper together, you know.
Right, and I think that's a good point for people that are a little panicky on Amari Cooper. Do you think that has some to do with the defense they face? Because there is some worry that Crabtree's seeing more targets than Cooper, but do you think they're gonna be more favorable matchups? I guess I'm saying, are you still willing to start Cooper at the same level you were before? Or are you considering replacing him with, like, say you had Crabtree and Cooper, just heads up, you had to pick one of the two of them, the other one sits. Is it clear that Crabtree is your guy, or is there more to it?
Man, that's tough. I doubt many people are in a situation where they have both. But with
Right,
that said,
totally
if
agree.
I think you have to kind of regard Crabtree as the wide receiver one on that team right now. I mean, even Seth Roberts is kind of outproducing Cooper at times, not necessarily in volume, like on targets, but I don't know. It also, I think, has to do a lot with that, just how good Crabtree is around the goal line. Like, you look at the stats that they're putting up, like Crabtree is getting more targets, but Cooper is very efficient with his. He caught 5 of 6 balls for 83 yards yesterday. Like, that's solid. He just didn't get the end zone. You know, if he has one touchdown, that totally salvages his day. I'm not too worried about Cooper. I'd still feel okay about using him. I think he's probably a bit of a buy low. But with that said, I think that Crabtree is just a guy who has been disrespected for 2 straight years in terms of how fantasy people evaluate him. I love Crabtree. I think that he's a definite, like, top 20 wide receiver almost every week.
Yeah, and I think recency bias probably plays in a little for people, their love for Crabtree, just because if you look at the target numbers on a weekly basis, Cooper and Crabtree are very, very similar. Crabtree's down week was in week two with 5 targets. Cooper's just happened with 6 targets. Other than those 1 week each, they've never been below 9 targets. And so I think, yeah, this kind of the game plan, the way the Ravens match up, I'm not thinking Cooper is just dreadful. I would expect that he will bounce back, but you're right. Crabtree has been really underrated the last 2 years and is going to keep returning really good value for his owners.
Yeah, Cooper has more yards on fewer catches than Crabtree. He's still a very good receiver. One other subtle thing that is kind of weighing him down a little bit is his 2 fumbles. I don't know how a wide receiver fumbles that much in only 4 games, but that has also kind of nerfed his production to a point where you might be able to get a discount on him. I think that throwing out a trade offer for Cooper this week is probably not a bad idea if the owner's panicking. And look at this. Now we're on the Oakland Raiders experience. Sorry, Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, we kind of jumped.
That's okay. I think we got everything out of the way with Big Ben. Do you have anything else on him before we move on to our Week 5 preview?
The only thing I'll note is that I don't put a lot of stock in injury risk, but I do think that Ben is one that has to be given a little bump to his injury risk, just because of what we've seen, the hits he takes, and that he has been injured so frequently. That's one risk. Like someone on Twitter asked me, what are the chances, what are the odds he's a top 5 total points quarterback at the end of the year? And I had to downgrade it a little bit just because there is that chance he gets hurt. But just on his talent and on that offense, if he's on the field, I think you're going to be very happy with him.
What sort of percentage chance would you give him of doing that?
I told him I think it's in the range of 50 to 70% because he's right now right on the bubble for top five. I mean, he is within less than a point per game and within 4 total points of being at that QB5 mark. And there's several guys below it. Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, Matthew Stafford. Brady is going to come back and could. I kind of doubt he'll get there, but I think there's several names, probably eight or so, that are going to be fighting for that top five. So I can't really say it's much higher than that. But Ben is probably in that 50 to 70% range, I would say.
Yeah, my gut was to say 60 to 70%. I like that call. But let's keep going. Let's look to week five. And you just mentioned this guy, Tom Brady. He's coming back. What do you expect from him? Do you expect he'll just come right back and start being, that top five talent at QB again?
Well, against Cleveland, he's going to have a hard time doing anything else, I guess. This week, I would expect that he'll shake off some of the rust and look very good against a bad team. Yeah, I at this point don't see any reason to think that he's not going to be a great option. I think he does come back and immediately is a top 10 guy. He is nearing the age cliff that we fear, and just I've said it before, but statistics bear out that we don't see the age cliff coming, it just hits. And so not having seen Brady in even a single game gives you some concern. But I think on its face, this is still a very good team that just made Jimmy Garoppolo look very good. And as Gronk gets healthy, that's going to make it even better. And so, yeah, I think Brady is easily a top 10, probably a top five guy the rest of the way.
Yeah, and so that's my next question for you is, does Brady's return finally make Gronk a usable fantasy commodity again? Because he hasn't been at all this year, and people drafted him in the second or first round in most leagues.
Yeah, to me, it's just it certainly helps, but it's coincidence. Gronk's been hurt. I think that if he was healthy, he would have been an important part of the offense these first 4 weeks. So to me, it's more just these two things happening at the same time. Brady will give him a boost, but Gronk is Gronk. I mean, he's so talented. He's such a weapon that no matter who's under center, he's going to be an important part of the offense when he's healthy.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe the health thing has been overblown a little bit and they were just treating him with kid's gloves until Brady did return. But this is the week that we get to see, right? We're going to find out if Gronk deserves to get into that every week starter, conversation again at tight end. I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic, but if we see him have another down week with not that many targets, we have to infer that the injury is still bothering him, right?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That if he's in his first Brady week, if he still looks the same, there's really something going on. It's an interesting point. Maybe they were just being cautious. And yeah, we will really see against a very bad defense. This will really tell. Everyone should be feasting if they're healthy.
Well, speaking of bad defenses, the next quarterback I want to talk about is Marcus Mariota, and we've mentioned how just dreadful he's been so far, but he gets Miami's defense this week, and I'm wondering, is Miami's defense, the antidote to what Marcus Mariota has been suffering from, or is it just a Band-Aid?
Yeah, I don't think this is the antidote just because Miami is kind of a middle of the road defense for quarterbacks. I don't think they're such a fantastic matchup. They cure all evils. Delanie Walker's return didn't really make a difference. I just don't think, I said it last week, I don't think Exotic Smash Mouth is very good. I don't think they have enough weapons in the passing game to be a very strong option. I just don't think this sets up well for Marcus Mariota to be a great option. He'll be better than he is right now. He's not a 30th best quarterback, but I don't know that he suddenly looks like a top 10 option this week.
Yeah, you're right. And while Miami did make, AJ Green look like a god last week on Thursday night, their pass defense has generally been okay. By DVOA, last week they ranked 15th against the pass, and their defensive line against the pass ranked 11th. So clearly they're not total scrubs, even though they did not look good in week four. But I don't know. I think this is going to be kind of a make or break game for me with Mariota. Like, if we don't see him do at least something respectable. Like, I want to see that top 20 finish from him finally, because he's just been so bad. And I did have high hopes. Like, where's the rushing production? We got to see that eventually. He's running out of time to stay relevant for two quarterback leagues, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right that we need to see something. And even though AJ Green looked great, Tennessee has nothing close to an AJ Green. I mean, nope. Tajae Sharpe is nowhere near that. And so, yeah, Miami may be susceptible to an elite wide receiver, but I don't know that they're going to look very weak this year. I am pessimistic about Marcus Mariota for sure.
Okay, well, let's talk about, you know, not somebody who's been underperforming, but the guy who's been performing better than anyone else, and that's Matt Ryan. He and Julio Jones just completely annihilated the Carolina defense in week four. What do you expect for them now heading into week five versus Denver, another, you know, supposedly great defense?
I think this will be, well, this is kind of paint by numbers analysis, but I think it'll be a tough one. This should be an interesting test because Carolina, they do not have the secondary that people expect. And it has not been, I mean, it's not terrible, but Carolina is a much more exploitable secondary than they were last year. So seeing Ryan go off maybe isn't something that everyone predicted, but it's not shocking. I would be shocked if Matt Ryan has a 4 or 5 touchdown game against Denver. I think that they are a legitimate defense. I do think the pace of the game will be slower. And so I think he'll still get his numbers. I'm still playing him, but I would be really shocked if he has a high efficiency week.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, a lot of the analysis I was seeing yesterday on Twitter was, you know, people kind of coming out and saying, I told you so about the Carolina defense. And while I was probably still under the guys that, you know, Carolina's defense was pretty good, like I didn't rank Matt Ryan especially high relative to other people for week four. I think that the Denver defense is legit and that'll be a true test. It would be pretty awesome though if Matt Ryan could come out and put up another good week. Maybe not, you know, 4 or 5 touchdowns, but he could do like a 300-yard, 2-touchdown game, and I'd be pretty impressed. I'm looking forward to that matchup. That should be fun to watch.
Yeah, that's got to be, just looking at the early schedule, that's going to be one of the best matchups of the week, just because it'll really tell us a lot about these teams.
Yeah, and kind of moving back to Carolina, they face Jameis Winston in week 5. We've seen Jameis have some up-and-down production here, a couple of 30-point games, and then a couple clunkers. What do you expect from him and the rest of that offense, Mike Evans and company, in week 5?
Yeah, I think this, like I said, I think this should be a bounce back. I don't think that the Panthers are as bad as, or are as good as we had seen them in the past. And so I think this will be a fine week. Winston is still throwing a lot. He was helped by a rushing touchdown last week, but other than his week 4 performance, his passing game has not been very disappointing. I mean, he's been throwing quite a bit. He's been getting good yardage. He's thrown quite a few touchdowns. It's the turnovers that have been a problem. He has 8 interceptions through 4 games. His coach, Dirk Cutter, even said he's very concerned about the turnovers. I think this is probably a good week for him to look okay, as long as he can hold up under the pressure. That's the big thing, is the front 7 in Carolina is still good, but I think that he'll find some gaps in the secondary, and this is probably a good week for Winston.
Yeah, the big question for me is whether Carolina just has a problem defending like those elite receivers like Mike Evans is supposed to be, or if they can learn from what happened to them at the hands of Julio Jones last week and, you know, learn from that a week later and really put the clamp down. Because I feel like this is the type of offense with Tampa Bay that if you take away that key threat, if you can stop Mike Evans, that they're going to really struggle to move the ball. I just don't trust guys like Cameron Brate and Adam Humphries to pick up the slack there. You know, that's I just don't see it.
Yeah, Cameron Brate has become a real vital part of this offense. It's kind of surprising to say, but in a PPR league, he's a real asset.
Yeah, he's basically the second receiver on that team, which is kind of insane. Just in general, coming out of week 4, looking ahead to week 5, doesn't it feel to you like this is just another crazy NFL season? Like, I don't even know which teams are good. Like, if I asked you to name the top 5 teams or the top 6 teams in the NFL, who would make your list?
It's a good question because there's so many weaknesses you can point out. You have to look at the Eagles because they're undefeated. You have to look at the Broncos similarly. But both of them, you're talking about rookie or second-year quarterbacks, and you're just not sure that they're really there. I think the Patriots are easily at the top of that list. Now that they're getting Brady back, they're a very complete team. And at that point, I start to struggle thinking through all the weaknesses I see in the rest of the list. I'm sure I'm missing some obvious ones, but what else do you have?
Yeah, for me, it actually kind of correlates really well to that startable QB percentage study I did, where there are five elite QBs, and then everybody else from, you know, 6 down to 25 is pretty average. I feel that the NFL is like that now, where there are a handful of teams, a small handful, that are very good. I think that the list for me is New England and Denver and Seattle. And that's about it. Like, you could throw in Pittsburgh if you wanted to. You could throw in the Vikings, I suppose, but I don't trust their offense. I really don't think that, aside from those three teams, that anyone is really all that much better than the field. And that's very interesting. It's going to make for a lot of kind of craziness when it comes to fantasy football, because it'll really boil down to how teams match up against each other. We talked about Oakland and Baltimore and how those receivers just kind of were the right recipe to be able to attack that Baltimore defense. And if that's the case, you really have to analyze each matchup each week, you know, on a granular level. You can't just kind of blindly rank teams, you know, power rank teams, and say, okay, team A is better than team B, so, or ranked higher than team B, so they're definitely going to beat that team. It just doesn't work like that. It's very interesting.
Right. And we were talking off air before we started recording that after 3 weeks, we were saying, you know, we're kind of hitting the point where we can predict things, and then week four happens where it's just so many unpredictable things. I expect we'll see quite a bit more of that, just things that we didn't expect and some changes and teams looking better and worse than we thought, just the way that players do. And so it's the fun of this. I mean, if it was predictable, we wouldn't enjoy this game nearly as much, fantasy football. It's the unpredictability. It's the trying to forecast. It's hoping to be successful. It's that lady luck that you're always chasing.
Yeah. I'm looking at the standings here in the NFL, and I want to play a little trivia with you before we wrap things up here. Do you know which team has the highest point differential so far?
Let's see. If I had to think about it, oh, man, I would bet that it's probably the Eagles.
You are correct. Plus 65.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible? The next closest team is Denver at plus 47.
Okay. Yeah, see, the Eagles' defense has just been lights out so far this season.
It's legit.
The offense has been better than we expected, but really the defense is the shocking part of that team.
Yeah, and then the next kind of tier are all in that, like, 20 to 30 range. So it's like Pittsburgh, New England, Dallas is at plus 24, so are the Vikings, and the Falcons are plus 28, of course, and Seattle's plus 25. The LA Rams at 3-1 are minus 13.
I would never have gotten the Cowboys. That's not one. All the other names are kind of, they ring true, but I wouldn't have guessed that the Cowboys would have been that high on the list.
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot to do with schedule up to this point and, like, what matchups these teams have faced, but it's pretty telling that there are like, two clear-cut higher-end teams. I think that, you know, New England is the sleeping giant there at plus 20, but they're about to get Tom Brady back. I'd be terrified if I had to play them moving forward. I think they're going to be, you know, just fine.
Yeah, didn't they just come out 3-1 missing him? Like, that's just unfair.
It's not right, man. Bill Belichick's the GOAT. All right. Anything else before we close things up here, Josh?
I will say I was a little disappointed that we didn't get a new starting quarterback. We're only at 37, I should say. Let's see the numbers probably rise, but I expect we'll get to that 50-51 mark that we've had the last several seasons. There's a lot of room to go, though, so be looking for who those 12 future quarterbacks are going to be.
Well, it could be as many as three this week, right? We could see Derek Anderson, Drew Stanton, and Paxton Lynch all get their first start of the year. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. I definitely missed really hard on my Trevon Boykin call last week. I was on like three podcasts and pumping him up everywhere. It's like this really sneaky two quarterback play. And of course, Russell Wilson comes out and looks great. I don't know. I was just the way that injury looked when it happened. Like, I just had no faith in him coming back to play, especially heading into their bye next week. I don't know. That was very strange to me. I'm surprised he played, but good for him, man. I'm glad he's healthy. Let's close it down here. Want to remind you guys once again, if you can, to please review and rate the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just in general, the podcast is brought to you by 2QBs.com. You should be checking out 2QBs.com on the regular. We have a ton of awesome writers and podcasters that are delivering awesome content for you every day of the week. You can follow us on Twitter at 2QBs. You spell that out, TWOQBS. We record the pod on Monday nights, so if you want to tweet us some questions like Monday during the day, we'll try to answer as many as we can. You can follow Josh on Twitter at Lake2QBs, and you can follow me at GregSauce. You can search us up on Facebook. If you're into that sort of thing, give us a like. We'd appreciate it. And our email address is 2QBs@gmail.com, spelled out the same way. If you have longer form questions, you can always get a hold of us that way. And for Josh, for the rest of the team at 2QBs, we are signing off. Good luck in week 5. We're out of here.